It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. Summer dining in the Valley has seen some huge changes. It didn't used to be a time to open a new restaurant and try a new concept, mostly because a lot fewer people were around. The winter visitors had left. And with school out, some of the full-timers try to grab a couple of weeks in California or someplace else. So what is the summer restaurant scene like in the Valley now, and what are some trends to look for? To answer those and a lot of other questions, I'm joined by Howard Seftel, Arizona Republic restaurant critic. Howard, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
So how long have you been reviewing restaurants in the Valley?
23 years.
Okay, so in those 23 years, this is a big question. What are some things that have changed, especially about dining in the summer?
Oh, well, when I first got here in 1990, literally, you could go to a restaurant, throw a bowling ball down the middle of the restaurant, and, you know, no liability whatsoever. It was dead. I mean, D-E-A-D, dead. One of the things that keeps summer dining going here, of course, are the resorts. Because the resorts can't close. Somebody's staying there. Somebody has to eat there. So they are desperate to put fannies in those seats. And actually, for us here in the Valley, the resorts actually often have nice deals in the summertime. So a meal that could be, you know, $75 to $100 at a fancy resort, they might have a $40 three-course meal to try. So the resorts, for us locals, the resorts are a terrific opportunity that, you know, people are getting on planes and spending thousands of dollars to come here. So it's something we should take advantage of.
You've written some about the resorts in the past, and I don't want to pigeonhole it, but it does sound like some of the changes that have been made are to make them maybe more conventional, less Southwestern, sort of more steakhousey.
Bingo. This was accelerated by the recession, but it actually started before. The notion, sort of an old-fashioned notion of dining, where you would go and sit there for 2.5 or 3 hours and linger over a meal, that's 20th century. And the other component to this is actually interesting in terms of marketing. Let's say you're at a resort for 4 or 5 nights. Well, do you want to eat in this ultra-fancy, swanky restaurant 4 or 5 nights? Now, the resorts, you know, want to keep you on property. So if you have a restaurant that's, you know, there's steak and there's fish and there's an Italian dish, you're more likely to come back than if you have a luxurious Mary Elaine's-type restaurant where you're going to, you know, nobody dines 5 nights in a row like that. On the other hand, I have to tell you personally, I bemoan the loss of individuality in these resort restaurants. If you remember the old Chaparral Room or Mary Elaine's, these kind of places, you know, you would eat there once a year. That would be the problem, or twice a year.
Right.
But they were fabulous. Can I give you one place that's still
Please.
Sort of like that?
Sure.
Which is a different point of view over at the Point at Tapatio Cliffs. It's perched up on a butte up there. It's a lovely view, very old-fashioned. But there's a little bit of the old-time swank there.
When we think about some of the trends and some of the things that seem to be picking up as far as Valley dining, summer or otherwise, is there enough of a variety in terms of, and I'm not even talking about off-season, just in general, enough varieties for folks who either are flush with cash or those who are not, is there enough being offered out there that everyone can try something interesting?
Absolutely. And the reason is, Steve, in the last 25 years, is the explosion of ethnic restaurants here. When I first came here, you know, Mexican, Italian, and Chinese, and really bad Chinese, and pretty bad Italian, and okay Mexican. I did an article a few weeks ago for the World Cup, about the World Cup. There are 32 teams in the World Cup. Something like 22 of them had restaurants, you know, representative national restaurants here. Uh-huh. And I think I figured there's something like 36 national cuisines here, which is just, if you've been here any length of time, is staggering, because this was perhaps the most white bread town in America, you know, 40 years ago. I have to tell you, I have the Valley's first guidebook, which was published, restaurant guidebook,
okay,
published in the late 70s. It's a hoot. And one of the things they do is, I mean, they had to explain what sushi was. There was a restaurant here, one Japanese restaurant, and it had sushi, and it explained that it's raw fish and it's not for everybody. But don't worry if you don't like sushi, because the restaurant offered a happy hamburger, H-A-P-P-I, with teriyaki sauce, in case you didn't want the sushi.
So not even on the kids' menu.
That's... No, that was for the adults. And, of course, forks and knives.
So how much of an influence has the Midwestern, the folks who come here for the winter, for the cooler months, how much of an influence has that? We talked a little bit about with resorts, but in general, are people who come from other states more adventurous themselves now?
Yes, and I think it's because they're coming from a larger variety of states and situations. Starting in the 90s, you got lots of Californians here, and we started to get more New Yorkers and, of course, more ethnic folks as well. So the foundation is a little more cosmopolitan, and that reflects itself in the eating scene. I wanted to mention something that you alluded to about the summertime and what people are doing in the summer. It used to be that nobody opened a restaurant in the summer, as you suggested, because you're sitting in front of your air conditioning vent until, you know, Columbus Day, because nobody wants to move. But what restaurant owners are finding now, particularly independent restaurant owners, is it's wonderful to open up in May, June, July, and August. And what's the reason? They work the bugs out before the crowds start coming. So, for example, I don't review an ambitious restaurant until it's been open for a couple of months. Well, and I'm not going to really review an ambitious restaurant in the summertime because nobody's here.
Right.
So this way, for both the guests and for the critics, they get a chance to work out the bugs, get their act together. So when October, November rolls around and season starts, they are ready to roll. So you can actually... Well, I would not recommend going to a restaurant right after it opens. You know, after 6 weeks or 8 weeks or so, it'll, you know, at the end of August, it's still going to be empty and you can go in.
It's Here and Now on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix talking with the Arizona Republic restaurant critic Howard Seftel for a couple of more minutes. So we've seen light rail expand.
Yeah.
We've seen more people moving to downtown Phoenix. How could that affect the restaurant scene in the Valley? The
downtown is absolutely the hottest restaurant neighborhood in the Valley, no question. Everyone wants to move there. And the fact that they can't suggests that the landlords are also understand that they're dealing from a position of strength. I will give you one quick example. There's a new restaurant that's opening next week called Mucho Macho Taco. This is a fellow who used to be with Tacos Atoyac over in Phoenix. It's the best tacos in Arizona. And he was looking for a place he was scouring downtown Phoenix. He just could not find a location there. Now, is downtown Phoenix, you know, downtown San Francisco? No. But there's starting to be a convergence, and this was actually starting, Steve, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and the recession just brought that to a dead halt. And now it looks like momentum is starting up again. If I were a restaurant owner, and believe me, I'm a low-paid journalist, I have no business expertise whatsoever, but I would be looking downtown's the place to be.
Howard, just about a minute or so left, so I put the pressure on for you now. Couple of restaurants that maybe people haven't heard much about, a couple of restaurants that are relatively new, doesn't have to be that you're excited about.
Well, I haven't been there yet, but here are a couple of new ones. Over in Scottsdale is a place called Sumo Maya. And as you might guess from the title, it has Japanese and Asian and Mexican elements. So there's a Mexican-style Vietnamese soup and Peking duck tacos. That sounds great. Michael O'Dowd, the man who ran Kai for 10 years, it got 5 stars from AAA and five diamonds from AAA and 5 stars from Forbes Travel Guide, one of the great restaurants of the country. He left. Now he's opened up a little shop in what used to be the Coronado Cafe in the Midtown Phoenix corridor called Urban Vine. I can't wait to check that out. There's a new restaurant, Steak 44, which is run by the Mastro family, who run Michael Dominic's.
When I was a kid, that was Cork and Cleaver.
Exactly. And Well, let me put it this way. You could have eaten 10 meals at Cork and Cleaver for what it's going to cost you there. But it's a really nice, fun steakhouse.
Howard Seftel, restaurant critic for the Arizona Republic, appears most Wednesdays
right.
with a criticism in there. Howard, thanks for the time.
My pleasure.